The following program is a PodcastOne.com production.
I'm so glad you're with us on the Clark Howard Show, where it's about you learning ways to keep more of what you make on the web at Clark.com. When you have a question, Clark.com/ask. Coming up in today's Clarkrageous Moment, we are moving into the peak of the gift card buying season. I have a special warning for you about not getting what you pay for absolutely at all. You're going to want to hear this. And later this hour, things like Bitcoin have been all the rage for the last couple of years. There's a new competitor. People are speculating on it, bidding it up. I'm going to tell you the ups and downs and the dangers involved with a cryptocurrency. What a fancy term. I don't know if you heard, but there was a tragic loss of life and injuries at an oil pipeline that serves, a gasoline pipeline that serves the eastern seaboard, serves jet fuel to aircraft up and down the eastern seaboard, gasoline for cars, diesel for trucks. And as a result of the explosion and fire, there's been a major disruption of supplies in the pipeline serving, I think it's 14 states on the eastern seaboard. In the futures market, the price of a gallon of gasoline has been going up and down all day as people are speculating on how quickly the pipeline will be fixed. If it does take a while, there will be disruptions in the supply available to you for your vehicle. Airlines are nervous that they're not going to be able to get fuel at certain eastern seaboard airports in the next day or two. And we'll just have to see how it plays. It is one of those circumstances that we will probably be more flexible at dealing with than we're given credit for. But you do need to have some kind of contingency plan. If you're an employer, you've got to think through how people are going to be able to serve you as employees if they cannot get to work. People who don't need to necessarily be in the office, this is a great opportunity to have people work from home. And being creative about sharing rides with others is going to be something that may become necessary in a number of cities. People, when they hear about these pipeline disruptions, which this one only follows one by 7 weeks, that affected the same eastern seaboard area. There was a big leak that caused a shutdown of a major pipeline. People run out and panic buy gasoline. And you have to make your own decision about that. That does exacerbate the shortages, at least in the short term. And what about creating your own energy and not having to worry about a pipeline or anything like that? Well, Solar City, which I think is the nation's largest solar company, has developed a roofing shingle that comes in different styles, depending on what kind of style roof you have, that is a way for you to have solar at your house and generate solar electricity without having what a lot of people think are really ugly rooftop solar panels on their house. And these shingles, because they conform to the architecture that is expected in a neighborhood with Spanish style roofs or traditional shingles or whatever, it just fits in and effortlessly saves money. Cost of panels has been going down and down and down. I've said in the past that for a typical home, net of tax credits, it'll cost you $14,000 to put in solar in the average home. Today, in many parts of the country, it's somewhere around $8,000 to put in solar panels at your home, net of credits. The power companies around the country are anywhere from hostile, furious, to terrified, to paranoid of people putting in solar at their homes, and have been getting their captive audience in state governments to pass regulations or laws that make it very difficult for you to put solar in at your home. In the state of Florida, there is a big fat lie on the ballot that that is a vote for citizens to take about whether or not solar will be able to be installed at residences and businesses in the state of Florida. The initiative on the ballot is worded as if it's pro-solar, but it's actually very anti-solar and will make solar non-existent in the Sunshine State, which is idiotic. But anyway, the thing that's coming is very affordable battery storage for energy at your house, where ultimately the ultimate fear for the power companies is you won't need them anymore. And you will be able to be essentially your own power station at your house. And these new shingles I'm talking about that you can put on a roof, that's best put on when a house is built or when your roof wears out and it's time to put on a new roof, that's when you put on the solar shingles on your house that from the street you can't even tell are solar. And at that time, if you put in the batteries, typically in a garage, you will maybe not need your power company one bit. And so it is a giant change that for the last 85 years, getting power at your home has always been about Soviet-style monopoly power company providing power to you at your home. And that era is coming to an end. But just as the Soviet Union, the communists fought to their last breath, getting rid of the Soviet Union and the oppressiveness of that system, the power companies are going to fight tooth and nail against the technologies that are coming available that will provide better, and if you care, cleaner and cheaper energy to you, your business, and your home. Chris is with us on the Clark Howard Show. Hello, Chris.
Hey, Clark, how are you doing today?
Great, thank you, Chris. You want to talk about debts and getting by on one income, is that right?
I sure do.
What's going on?
Well, my wife and I, we both graduated from college 2 years ago, and we got married a year ago. And with our marriage, we also brought a significant student loan debt together. We would like to begin saving for a down payment on a house, but currently my entire income minus savings for retirement is going towards knocking out those student loans.
So wait. Why did she choose to marry you? Does love conquer all that she would marry you with all that student loan debt?
Apparently so, because I've asked myself the same question.
So the student loan debt, though, is a no fool and no joking thing. You've got a lot. How much is it?
So we started at $72,000, and we have, in just under the past year, paid down to about $44,000.
You know that's fantastic, don't you?
Well, thank you. We're proud of the progress we have made, but we know there definitely still is a ways to go.
Well, but wait a minute. I mean, with you having wiped out $28,000 of student loan debt in such a short cycle, you're more than a third of the way there. And moving forward, there's so much less interest carry you're having to pay because the balance is so much lower.
We started at, I think, close to $9 in interest. And according to the spreadsheet I keep, we've dropped that down to under $5. So when you talk about a daily interest rate, we've made a ton of headway.
That is great. It sounds like you're in the midst of digging yourself out, and you're doing as well as I would ever hear from anybody.
Well, thank you. I really do appreciate that.
Well, so how can I help you at this progress stage?
So basically, we want to begin saving for a house. We're kind of moving towards that stage where we think we're ready for that investment. But just with the amount of student loan debt we still have left to pay off, we're trying to figure out that balance of still, laser focusing as much as possible on student loans, but also saving for a down payment so that when our loans are finally paid off, we already have money put back for a house, and it's not like we're starting at zero.
Yeah, this is, but there's a conundrum with this. There's a difficult part of this, and that is that mortgage interest rates are so favorable right now, and it's hard to know what they're going to be, let's say, 2-3 years from now. And so the if you paid, I can't believe I'm going down this line of thinking, but you're so responsible in paying down debt, I've got to ask these questions. What is your interest rate that you have overall on this 44?
On the 44, so there's various interest rates. The lowest is 3.15, and the highest is 6.41.
Okay, that answers, you don't need to go any further. That answers my question. So I'm not even going to go down that tangent. So I think that you spend at least the next year being as single-minded as you've been about paying on the student loans.
Okay.
And you'll wipe out the highest interest rates first and whittle it down to where as the balance drops, you're also going to have an overall blended lower interest rate. Pay only the minimums on the lower rates and throw every dollar you can at the highest rate ones.
Okay.
And then a year from now, I'd say you should look at going to paying the minimums on the student loans, and pretty quickly you'll be able to come up with 3.5% down payment towards the purchase of a home.
Okay.
And even though I'd like for you to have more money in the deal buying a home, in this case, you should get in that home in a year or so, and even with that minimal down payment. Because at that point, your student loan debt will be so much more manageable. You'll have what you have left will be at a much lower interest rate than the ones that are at 6. So you got ones half that. And with your determination, you'll be able to pay for that home and continue to work on the student loan debt, not at the speed you've been working at it.
Okay. So one kind of side question regarding that, would you recommend potentially refining the 6.41% loan?
No, I wouldn't bother because, again, the speed at which you're paying, if you just throw money every month at the 6.41, you're going to wipe that one out.
Okay. Okay. The trick with that one is that is actually my lowest principal balance. So between that being a single amount at 6.41 and then the other various 3% and 4% rate, they have a higher balance. So as far as daily interest rate goes, they're literally
Don't worry about 10%. Any of that. Don't worry about that. Just pay minimums on everything except the 6.4. When you have it wiped out, you pay minimums against everything except the one that was 5 point something, and you just work your way down the interest rate ladder.
Okay.
And this is so inspiring to me. I'm telling you, Chris, I cannot recall a situation where somebody was able to pay off such an enormous amount of their student loan debt in such a quick cycle. And it's going to pay dividends for you and your bride for the rest of your lives that you've attacked this so diligently, so quickly. Today's Clarkrageous moment could not be more timely with the Christmas shopping season now fully underway. Now that it's November, I need to tell you that the most popular gift to give this Christmas can be Fool's Gold, that gift card that you might give someone. Do I have a key warning for you in today's Clarkrage?
Scams, ripoffs, outrages. It's a Clarkrageous moment.
Got a riddle for you. You go to a corner drugstore, you go to a discount store, you go to any store, and they have one of those gift card racks. And you think, how perfect, because they'll have gift cards for retailers, restaurants, attractions, sports teams, whatever. So you think, wow, you know, I haven't known what to buy, blah, 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 or for this person or that person. I know they love going here. I'm going to buy them that gift card for that restaurant or whatever. So you go, you buy the gift card. You take it to the register. You buy it. You give it to your friend or relative. And then sheepishly, they later approach you and say, you know, that gift card you gave me, they may not ever tell you, that gift card had no money on it. Well, consumer columnist David Lazarus has written a column about people getting ripped off. One couple got ripped off for $1,000 with gift cards they bought at the drugstore chain CVS to use at the department store Nordstrom. And what happened when they bought the gift cards, paid CVS $1,000, they gave the gift cards, that's a pretty generous gift, to a daughter. Daughter goes to use them at Nordstrom, no money on them. And there's a problem that criminals have figured out how to capture the information from those gift cards that are out there that are inactivated at the register. And then they continually check the gift card numbers. And the second one is activated, they empty it. And the problem when you buy at one place for redemption at another is everybody points the finger at the other and says, not us, not us. Talk to them, not us. And you're out the money. Gift card security is pathetic. And this is something we got calls about in the aftermath of every Christmas shopping season. But it's going to be a bigger issue this year because criminals have gotten better at figuring out how to empty these cards. If you do choose to buy gift cards, be careful how much money you spend on them. And buy them only from the establishment the gift card is for use at. And use them as quick as you can so that if there is a problem, it's discovered very quickly, not much delayed.
Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans proudly supports this podcast. Rocket Mortgage brings the mortgage approval process into the 21st century. It's fast, powerful, and completely online. You see, Rocket Mortgage has taken all the complicated, time-consuming parts of applying for a mortgage out of the equation. Hate searching through stacks of old files and paperwork? Well, with Rocket Mortgage, you can easily share your bank statements and pay stubs at the touch of a button. It helps you get approved in minutes for a custom mortgage solution that's been tailored to your unique financial situation. Even better, with Rocket Mortgage, you can do all of this on your phone or tablet. It's a quick online process that you can manage from the convenience of your couch. So if you're looking to refinance your mortgage or buy a home, check out Rocket Mortgage today at quickenloans.com/save. That's quickenloans.com/save. Equal housing lender, licensed in all 50 states. NMLSconsumeraccess.org, number 3030.
Welcome to the Clark Howard Show, where we're all about you saving more, spending less, avoiding getting ripped off. Follow me at facebook.com/ClarkHoward, on the web, clark.com, our bargain site, clarkdeals.com. And when you have a question, clark.com/ask. I want to talk about something that I am amazed how many calls we used to get about something called Bitcoin. Bitcoin was a cryptocurrency. It was a non-governmental money that was a huge deal with a bunch of people in the U.S. and elsewhere for a number of years, with people buying Bitcoin as a speculative, quote-unquote, investment. That they were banking on worldwide turmoil and that people would lose faith in government-issued money around the world, and that Bitcoin would go to the sky. Well, unfortunately, it didn't work out that way. It was a lot of internal theft of Bitcoins. People lost money. People who speculated got burned in a lot of cases, because money is not something you should be speculating on. Money is a method of paying for things. And money is recognized as having a value in the marketplace based on all the transactions that take place every day. But hope springs eternal, and a lot of people without faith in government here and around the world are looking for the alternative. A new one that there's all kinds of buzz about in the last week is Zcash. The letter Z, cash. And Zcash is another cryptocurrency, another computer-generated currency, if you will, that people are fired up about, with an additional attraction to it that it's supposed to be untraceable, making it very valuable to people who engage in criminal activity or terrorism, or who don't trust government. So it could have a libertarian angle on it as well. So people are rushing to buy Zcash as speculators again, like what happened with Bitcoin when it was out early. And there are a number of very smart brainiacs involved with Zcash. And so they're hoping that they're going to be able to create something that is much more secure as far as not being able to be stolen like Bitcoins were, and that will allow for transactions to be confirmed without any spy or government agency or anyone being able to trace the movement of the Zcash. So the thing with any of these currencies, and there will be others that will come along, there have been others that have tried in between these two, is that, remember, it will only be worth whatever the marketplace says it's worth. And the reason to have an alternative currency is because you want to use it as a way to pay for things, not as a quote-unquote investment. The word investment and a cryptocurrency, those two things are alien concepts from each other. So I know if this follows the path at all of Bitcoin, I'm going to get calls from people who are just breathlessly excited about what they think is going to be the next get-rich-quick opportunity, having Zcash. And I will tell them exactly what I'm telling you right now, that if you want to use an alternative currency, understand what the purpose of it is, and that the purpose is not as a way to invest. It's a way to buy and sell goods and services, both legal and illegal. Kay is with us on the Clark Howard Show. Hello, Kay.
Hi. Thank you.
Kay, you are interested in buying something that's actually pretty dull, but makes our lives more exciting because it gives us time to have more excitement in our lives. What are you trying to buy?
A dishwasher. I've bought a brand before, and we liked it so much, you brought the same model and replaced it, and it didn't, neither one lasted a year. So I'm trying to be real particular of the one I choose this time, and a place I'm looking at, I've seen in the newspaper maybe closing, so I'm not sure where to buy because, you know, if there's a trouble future, I want to know I got someone to call.
That is a great question. Okay, so dishwashers, people can spend a lot of money on them. I mean, it's not unusual that people spend four figures on a dishwasher.
I cannot believe the price variance.
Yeah, because you can buy, like on our Clark deals today, we have a dishwasher for under $200. And, I mean, you can, I mean, that's all you have to spend on one. I'm looking at the Home Depot website right now, and they have several models you can buy in the $200 range, between $200 and $300. And so this is a purchase that you don't have to blow a bunch of money on. And I encourage you to spend, when in doubt, spend less rather than more.
And I would prefer that. Mike, a good question is the stainless steel interior over the plastic.
I would go with plastic, save the money.
Really?
Yeah. Yeah, but I mean, come on, who are you asking? You're asking cheap guy. You think I'm going to say, oh, yeah, go with the fancy interior on the dishwasher. It's like my thing with washers and dryers. I just don't get why people want the fancy washer and the fancy dryer, you know, to to wash and dry your clothes and towels and stuff. So, you know, you can go the Consumer Reports route and see the dishwashers that they've found to be the best. And you can pay all different price points doing that. Or, in fact, I should probably cover, I think they have a guide to appliances they've done recently. I should cover that in a few days. But as far as buying the dishwasher that you're buying right now, rather than spend a bunch of dollars, you didn't get reliability out of spending a lot of money on one. Why don't you buy one that's got good, at least good purchaser reviews and is cheap?
Well, I've been racking my brains on the different sites, you know, Best Buys, Home Depot, Lowe's, et cetera, trying to figure that out. You know, you're going to have pros and cons with all. So, and I have done Consumer Reports too, but, you know, me and my husband make it, I think I know what I want, then he confuses me worse.
All right. Well, I think the way you solve confusion is spend less.
Okay.
I mean, think about it. If you buy, like this one we have on Clark Deals, if you buy it for $195 and the thing croaks out of warranty, think about what one repair visit is for a dishwasher.
Yes.
So that's me. I'm like, but I'm a bad one to ask because, as I've always said, I'll accept lower quality for a lower price on anything except premium ice cream. There's some things in life you just can't compromise, and for me it's ice cream, but on a dishwasher, price, that's my thing. Elaine is with us on the Clark Howard Show. Hello, Elaine.
Hey, Clark. Thank you so much for taking my call.
Sure. You're looking at buying a new car right now?
Well, it's going to be in 2017. My goal is I'll be 55 in October next year, and what I'm trying to do is get a car paid for while I'm working, so when I decide to hang it up and be retired like you, I will not have a car note.
That's perfect.
So my question is, I do get my auto and home insurance from one of the big wholesale warehouses, and they're offering a car program that you can buy through them, so I'm kind of questioning that. A store was telling me a little bit about it, but I didn't know if they were pushing their car program. But I've also heard people that have done it and said it was a great deal, and I didn't know what you thought about it.
Are we talking about the Costco car buying program?
Yes, sir.
All right. Now, do you know that they are now, if they were a car dealership chain, they'd be the number one seller of cars in the United States?
Wow. Are you serious?
Yeah, they have become, you know, because Costco's membership base is a pretty affluent membership base.
Uh-huh.
And they're more just as likely to buy new cars as used, where overall in the country, people overwhelmingly buy used cars. The uh-huh. Costco membership base is much more heavily a new car buying membership. And all the dealers and manufacturers want a piece of that business from the Costco members. So the Costco program, you go to Costco.com, or you get that colorful flyer as you leave the store, and it has the Costco preferred dealers for each brand. It's a set price, no negotiation. But I would do more work than just on faith take it that the Costco car buying program is going to be the cheapest.
Exactly, and that was going to be my next question. I didn't know if I should deal strictly with the car dealership, work a deal first, and then go through one of those other companies that gives you the price of the car, whatever everybody else is paying for.
Oh, True Car.
Yes, True Car.
Right, True Car is a great way to buy a car.
Okay.
And for anyone who has USAA as insurance, USAA has a True Car platform that usually is cheaper than True Car itself, but they buy the bones of it from True Car. So my feeling is there is no one method to the cheapest car, but that buying through one of the car buying programs is so much easier. It's not 100% hassle-free, but close, and you can't go wrong with True Car or Costco Wholesale. But if you're a Costco member, I think you owe it to yourself to also compare the same vehicle through TrueCar.
Okay, great.
And what happens is you're going to get a very low price in the market. It may not be the absolute lowest price anybody's ever bought that car near you, but it'll be close enough, and the buying experience is so clean.
Okay, great. Well, great. I'm a big Costco fan. I've had their homeowners insurance, and I have my car insurance with them, and it's worked for us. And I just love Costco's.
Well, it's hard not to love Costco, you know. I mean, I even named a dog Costco Wholesale. Costco Wholesale is now deceased, but, that's how much I love shopping at the store. Dan is with us on the Clark Howard Show. Hello, Dan.
Hello, Clark. Thanks for taking my call.
Certainly. Dan, you want to talk retirement income.
Yes, sir. Yeah,
What's the story?
I'm about a year and a half away from retirement, and I just went to a seminar that this gentleman talked about fixed index annuities.
Okay, I'm having trouble breathing. You know, you don't want to have me keel over and die, do you? Let's see. What should I play here? Okay, I'm trying to be serene and calm and breathe again.
I guess I know how you feel about them.
Fixed indexed annuities are poison to your pocketbook. They are a terrible product, and the insurance companies that push them are scum. How do you think I really feel? They are horrendous.
Yeah,
what they promise you is they promise you a blend of lack of risk and some amount of the return of the stock market in good years.
Right, right.
But it is the biggest, fattest lie ever. And if you were to go read the contract for one of these things, I can tell you that lawyers who went to college to be law school to be securities lawyers, they can't understand the contracts.
Mm-hmm.
And what happens in the easiest way to describe it is the insurance company stacks the deck against you. The guarantee that you will not lose money no matter what, it has so many exclusions to it that the guarantee of no loss is useless. But then at the other side, telling you that you're going to get the gains of the stock market is a terrible lie because you don't actually. They cap each year how much of the gain you get, and they don't give you the most important part of what happens with stocks in retirement. They don't give you any of the dividends from those stocks.
Right, right.
So they are a abysmally horrible concept.
Yeah, well, we had a follow-up yesterday, a sit-down with them, and trying to ask some questions about all the different things, the cap and the participation rate and everything else, and really couldn't get a straight answer. So I was,
you know why?
Really skeptical. Yeah.
You know why? Because the salesperson doesn't actually know. Because they don't understand the contracts either.
Yeah, yeah.
All right, I'll tell you what I want to do. All I've told you is that what the person was pitching you was terrible. Coming straight ahead, I want to talk about alternatives for you. How about that?
Okay.
If you're just tuning in, we've been talking to Dan, who went to one of those pitches for a piece of trash annuity, a fixed index annuity. And Dan, all I did was tell you how awful they were, but didn't tell you what you should do instead as you look to retirement in a year or so. So you ready for ideas?
Yes, please.
All right. So one thing in retirement, if you want to make sure you don't outlive your money, there is one annuity that you'll never hear about from an insurance agent because they don't make any money from selling it, called a life annuity or immediate payout annuity.
Yes.
It's like taking a sum of cash and turning it into a lifetime stream of income.
Mm-hmm.
So you can never outlive your money.
Mm-hmm.
People buy them in blocks of up to $100,000. So you don't put more than that with any one company. But if safety of your money rules above all, that would be a place I would look specifically to know that you're not going to have to worry about outliving your money.
Okay.
Again, the commissions on it are near zero, so insurance agents hate them. There's a website you can look at that'll explain how they work and give you a sense what kind of income you can generate from them called immediateannuities.com.
Mm-hmm.
There's something else I'd like you to look at as well. The company Vanguard, which I talk about a lot.
Yes.
Vanguard has a product for retirees called the Managed Payout Fund. And it is a brilliantly designed way of funding retirement. And you can do a combination of something like the Managed Payout Fund from Vanguard and immediate annuities. And they could work very well together as a way to fund retirement. Go to Vanguard and put in the search term Managed Payout Fund.
You know, when you're going to buy a car, pricing information is great and necessary. But there's more to doing it than just the price. There's the actual buying experience. If you want to enjoy a better one, you should go to a True Car certified dealer. They're there to help you find the car that you want, and they're also what make True Car unique. With True Car, you can connect with a local certified dealer that you choose, so you can lock in a guaranteed savings off the MSRP and enjoy a totally better buying experience. And by better, they also mean faster. Over 2 million cars have already been sold to True Car users who have visited their True Car certified dealer. And there are over 11,000 True Car certified dealers nationwide, so it's probably pretty easy to find one near you. And check this, for a new car, average True Car users save $3,279 off MSRP. All right, so you're probably wondering, how do I do this? It's easy, just go to TrueCar.com or, right there on your phone, download the True Car app. You can find the car you want, see the True Car pricing curve, which shows you what other people in your area paid for the same car, and that way you can know you're getting a good price and feel confident. Then you'll get a guaranteed savings certificate from the True Car certified dealer. Go to the dealer, and your guaranteed savings off MSRP will be honored, and you enjoy a quick, easy experience. How's that for car buying? So when you're ready to buy a new car, or even a used one, visit TrueCar.com or download the True Car app and enjoy the better car buying experience. Some features are not available in all states.
Glad you're with us on the Clark Howard Show, where it's about you learning ways to save more and spend less, and don't let anyone ever rip you off. On the web, Clark.com. When you have a question, Clark.com/ask. Half hour from now, we're going to talk about new ways to buy cars. You know, we had a question just a few minutes ago about the car buying process on new cars. The changes going on right now with used cars, the most dramatic probably in the last 50 years. I'm going to tell you what you need to know so that you can be Clark smart when you're buying that used car. And speaking of being Clark smart, I want you to be Clark smart with shopping for Christmas. You know, we are now in the midst of the full deal for Christmas shopping. In fact, Amazon started what they call Countdown to Black Friday Deals Week. And if you go to the site, there are all kinds of deals that were posted today. And if you're Amazon Prime, there are deals just available to you that come and go. You can see the deals that are coming. They don't tell you what they're going to cost, but they call them Prime Early Access Deals, and they tell you when you're going to be able to see them. So as far as they're concerned, it already is Black Friday, and that's true. You know, Black Friday, as I told you last year, is a state of mind, not a day of the week anymore. As the whole extravaganza around Black Friday doesn't really work anymore for the retailers, and the combination of how people shop in person and online, the concept of Black Friday is the month of November, and we're in it. And the pricing going on is going to be on a lot of products, really the screaming deals on Black Friday, but I want to tell you a difference that you need to be aware of. A lot of the Black Friday merchandise is stuff that has specifically been purchased, even sourced by the big retailers for the Black Friday sales. As an example, if you go into Walmart or Target, you'll see the temporary displays that come in on the trucks that are cardboard displays, and all the store help has to do is get those displays on the floor. They're already prearranged, pre-ticketed, the whole thing, and they just put them out there. So there are truly screaming deals on Black Friday, but they're really, in a sense, fake deals because they're not merchandise that may not necessarily be stocked the other 51 weeks of the year. But the sales will be continuous. So it will be difficult to have a sense of when something that's being promoted to you as a deal truly is. And that's where taking the time to comparison shop instead of just grabbing an item is important. Looking at the various deal sites that rate items. Our Clark Deals site, we're going to have our Black Friday up soon. And in fact, I think we're going to do a segment on the show in a couple of weeks, I guess, when it's really key time for Christmas shopping. We'll do a segment with our Clark Deals experts talking about what things you should be looking for, what kind of deals they're finding. Target, I think I may have mentioned this, but I did. If I didn't, I want to make sure I get this out. Target has lost its mojo in the marketplace as a place to find bargains. The perception of Target is that it's an expensive place to shop, relatively speaking, to other places. And so Target is putting a major emphasis on lower prices this month and next, and they are going to be very aggressive with the pricing, and they want to be in your mind as a place that you will find bargains, which is something that Target lost and they're trying to get back. Walmart will, as always, be very aggressive in its pricing, but this year you may find that Target gives them a run for their money. And Target, if you go to Target.com, they are specifically with their .com trying to compete with Amazon Prime by offering free shipping on every order right now, and there's no membership you have to be part of. So it is going to be a very aggressive shopping season this month and next for your dollar with the deals. And I think it's going to be fun because there's no must-have items this year. So that makes the discounting greater when there's not items that people are just clamoring to get that people pay any price for. They're going to have to bribe us throughout the Christmas shopping season to get us in to buy. Chelsea's with us on the Clark Howard Show. Hi, Chelsea.
Hi, Clark. How are you?
Great. Now, you want to talk about getting off that treadmill I was just talking about.
A little bit, yes.
What are you thinking?
Well, I turned 30 this year, and I have no kids on either side of my family. My husband and I don't have any. None of our siblings do. But between all of the siblings and our parents, they insist on having a huge pile of gifts under the tree for everyone. And I'm trying to convince them that I'm not a kid. I don't need all of this stuff.
I guess that it may be, if I were to play amateur shrink for a second, maybe for your parents, it's hard to deal with the fact that you're all grown.
It is.
because usually the gift giving, once kids have become adults, is mainly for whatever kids, you know, young children there are, the next generation. And if people give each other gifts as adults, they're more tokens. This is very important to your parents for you to have the gift giving extravaganza?
I have been fighting with them for 5 years about it.
So you got to come up with something that would deal with that desire, that they would see as even a greater way to do things. So I would bet if your parents are like many other parents, having all the family together is really a big thing.
Yes.
So what if you proposed, instead of all going through this rote ritual of giving each other these gifts that nobody really probably wants, what if you had a thing where you all gave money into a vacation fund, and the gift that you give your parents is that you do a family reunion, let's say in the summer, where you all go to a lake and rent a house, or a beach and rent a place or whatever. And what you create is the thing that probably your parents value the most, and that is family time together.
Yeah, that's a great idea.
And that deals with what your parents feel is slipping away.
Right. In the meantime, though, I guess I'll have to listen to everything that you just said about shopping, right?
Well, no. Why don't you? How many siblings do you have?
Just one.
So call your brother or sister. I forgot what you said.
Brother.
Call your brother. Does he think it's as crazy as you do?
No.
Oh, he likes the gift giving.
Yeah.
Oh, man. Well, then do it only as a positive message. Say, hey, what do you think about us all getting together next summer? And the gift we give our parents is that we go rent a place.
I gotcha. Okay.
So it's not like this gift giving is terrible. If he thinks it's great, that's not going to work. So if instead you do it with a positive alternative. And then the other thing, is there any charity that is front and center important to your parents, their church, a community organization they're involved in, a charitable organization of some kind? Do they have anything like that that's really a high priority for them?
Not particularly, but they do. They do support the idea of giving to both Alzheimer's and diabetes. My brother has type 1 diabetes, and then we've had all of our grandparents but one have suffered from Alzheimer's.
So there you got it. So a way to really show family support is, instead of giving gifts, you give to an Alzheimer's group or to a diabetes group.
Yeah.
And then you feel like, instead of going through, and even if they don't want it, that's what you're going to give them. What are they going to say? What, you gave me lousy recognition for a donation to diabetes? Instead of giving me some gift I didn't want? Come on. They'll be okay with that.
I hope so. Thank you.
Oh, here's another idea. There are all these walks for diabetes and runs for diabetes and walks and runs for Alzheimer's. What if you get everybody to sign up to do one together as a family?
Oh, that's a good idea, too. My mom loves 5Ks.
Perfect. See, I knew I could keep trying every angle till I found one. So I am with you that adults giving gifts to other adults at Christmas only makes the retailers happy. Dave is with us on the Clark Howard Show. Hi, Dave.
Hey, Clark.
Dave, you would like your landlord to do something for you. Your landlord won't do.
Well, not yet. Correct.
What is it you'd like?
Well, you mentioned, gosh, at least a year ago, maybe even longer, how about 40% of all Americans are now renters, and how they're finally getting their rent payments reflected on their credit reports. And so when I heard this, I went rushing to my landlord, all excited, and he pretty much shot it down.
So it's voluntary for landlords to do this. More and more are, especially the big apartment rental chains are participating in these databases, and Experian, one of the three major credit bureaus, owns the biggest one called Rent Bureau, I think is the name of it. And so what it does is it allows landlords to check on would-be tenants, not just a traditional credit report, but how good a rent payer were they? And it allows people to have their rent payments reflected on their credit report. So it makes sense to me. You know, there are so many people now who don't like using credit, and their credit files are getting thin. or they have not, because of various circumstances, have not gotten credit. And so there are a lot of ways you can build a profile on how good a payer somebody is. You mentioned rent, Dave. You know what else is a great indicator?
What?
Paying utilities on time. Paying a cell phone bill on time. I mean, you think about the regular bills we have monthly. They're not really different than what we're talking about with credit. You know, it's something, it's an obligation you have. It comes every 30 days and you got to pay it. And how people pay those is a very good alternative. And there's a lot of noise in the credit scoring and credit reporting industries about doing what they call expanded profiles and expanded scores. But Experian with rent bureaus furthest along. But it is voluntary on a landlord to participate.
Do you know, I mean, today is ironically the seventh year. It's the seventh anniversary of my living here, and I've been paying him faithfully every month. So that's a good track record for me. Is this very difficult? Is there any cost to the landlord to do this?
Yes, I'm pretty sure the landlord has a fee that they have to pay to participate. That's how Experian's making its money.
Okay. And I may even consider, you know, offering to pay that if it's not outrageous.
So is your landlord one who just is not a traditional multi-complex landlord? This is somebody who just owns a couple of places?
He owns one duplex, and I'm his only renter. So
I don't even know if someone like him can participate.
Ah.
I'll tell you how. Are you good on the web?
Oh, yeah.
Okay, go to Experian Rent Bureau and read the section on how it works for a landlord, and you should be able to find out for him. And if he can do it, that's a neat idea to pay for it. And, oh, wow, there is a section for individual landlords. Encourage on-time rental payments and help your residents build their credit history by reporting their rental payment. So it's part of it. So go read that and find out what it costs. Share it with your boss, your landlord, and see if you can get him to do this to help you. I mean, you've helped him for 7 years of steady rent payments. It's nice for him. He can do something nice for you. It's time for Ask Clark. That's where you post a question on Clark.com that our producer Joel then asks for you. Joel, who do you have an Ask Clark from?
Clark, we got one from Paul. He says, in regards to term life insurance, what's the best amount of time to get a 20 or a 30-year policy?
Well, that depends on what's known as your insurable need is. If you have like young kids and you want to make sure they're covered to adulthood, you would buy a 20-year policy. The premiums would be much lower per year, but they'd only cover you for 20 years. On the other hand, let's say you're buying one to cover the remainder of your working lifetime, and you're in your mid-30s, you would buy a 30-year level term. It all is based on what period of time you need to provide replacement income for your survivors, your spouse, your kids, whatever.
All right, Clark and John says, I'm considering buying an RFID protective wallet or card sleeve holder. I'm not sure how to tell if the product really works, though. It seems anyone can claim that their product works, but how can I tell if it really does?
You can't tell till after you buy it. But if you were to buy one of those little RFID sleevey things, put a credit card in it, you could bring it out, try to tap it on one of the tap or pay things, and if it doesn't work, you know that sleeve is working. If you pull it out of the sleeve, try to tap again, and the transaction goes through, you have your answer. The wallet, gosh, I don't know how you'd know if the wallet was actually doing what it said it does.
Hey, everybody, I'm Tim Barnacle.
And I'm Harry Hill. We're the hosts of a new podcast called How I Got Here. Everybody has a story, and we've heard great ones from people all over the country.
People like Tom Brokaw,
Ken Burns, Maria Shriver, and Larry King.
You can listen to How I Got Here on PodcastOne.com.
And please subscribe to the show on iTunes.
Stay tuned for 60 seconds of AP News headlines right after this podcast.
Glad you're with us on the Clark Howard Show, where we're devoted to helping you keep more of what you make. On the web, clark.com. When you have a question, clark.com/ask. I mentioned moments ago that we were going to talk about the changes going on in the used car market. Millennials are forcing a complete shift in how people buy cars. Millennials have a different relationship with cars than people have historically in America. They are looked at not by everybody, because no group of demographic group is a monolith, but as a general trend, millennials look at vehicles more as transportation and not as a statement or as something they're buying for fun or whatever. And people historically have hated the car buying process, hated it, and old habits die hard. I thought that when CarMax became so successful that it would force the used car industry in the United States to change how used vehicles were sold, and it didn't. But millennials have shown the way that what CarMax was doing was the way things are going to be done in America. I've mentioned to you before about Carvana, which is from the ground up meant for people in their 20s and 30s as a completely user-friendly way to buy a used car, where you buy on your phone and you go to an ATM type thing and you put in a code and you get in your car and you drive off in it. Don't even have to have human interaction. And now the nation's largest auto dealer chain, AutoNation, says they get it. And they are reorienting their operation around the country. A lot of times you don't even know that dealers in your area are owned by AutoNation. They have like a little separate logo they use, but they still may have a recognizable name you're used to. But you're going to see pretty quickly how they're changing how they sell used cars. They're going to open standalone AutoNation USA places. Years ago, there was an attempt to have these standalone used car places, but now they're going to open a smaller number of them with smaller units. But all their existing dealers are transitioning to a no-haggle sale of used cars. The salespeople that are on commission are going to be forced to go to straight salary. If they don't like it, they can go to another dealer that still does things doing the grind where you get ripped off buying a used car. The AutoNation process is going to be one price, and they're going to give 2 years of free maintenance when you buy a car under the program. So that'll be your oil changes, inspection, tire rotation, batteries. And so the idea is to make buying a used car hassle-free. It also makes it possible for them to connect to the 20-somethings and 30-somethings that aren't going to buy a car from them the traditional way. But if somebody can go to the app for the dealer, pick out a vehicle, know the price, know the terms and all that, it's so much better. And it's the way things should be. You know, the car dealers all over the country have despised Tesla, the fancy car company. But what they feared is not the fancy ones. They feared the new $35,000 one that's being sold by Tesla. Direct, no negotiation. Here's the price. And the dealers that say that's a terrible thing for people to be able to buy a car without negotiating. Tesla took 400,000 orders for a car that doesn't even exist yet, and people paid $1,000 each for it. So know that if buying a car the traditional way drives you crazy, you don't have to do it anymore. And now that the nation's largest vehicle chain is converting to customer-friendly, the change is ultimately going to hit the tipping point. And it's just going to be the way it's going to be, except for the stubborn ones that won't adjust. Now, AutoNation at its dealers is only doing this right now for their used vehicle product. But it's not that far away that this is how people will buy new cars too. Just like you heard me talk about with what Costco has done for its members and TrueCar and USAA have done for people, USAA, their members, and TrueCar, just anybody can go to TrueCar.com and buy a new car free of the hassle. But with a used car, just because you buy it no hassle doesn't mean you should be buying that vehicle that you have your sights on. Used cars have histories. And you need to make sure the history that vehicle has is not a bad one. And that's why you have to have any used vehicle you ever consider buying checked out by a mechanic of your choosing. You don't want to buy trouble. Travis is with us on the Clark Howard Show. Hi, Travis.
How you doing, Clark?
Great. Thank you, Travis. You want to ask me if you should not have to commute so far.
This is true. And actually, my commute right now is only about 10 minutes, but yes.
Well, you know, I'm a big fan of not commuting, and I live the furthest from the studio I have lived at, I think, ever, and I whine about my 10-minute drive to the studio.
Yeah, well, I'll take a 10-minute drive. I make this move and turn it into about a 6-minute walk. So,
ooh, I gotta love that.
Right.
So what's it going to do to your wallet with that change in lifestyle?
So currently, right now, we pay about $930 a month. That's rent and utilities included. So pretty cheap. It's a townhouse, 3-bedroom, 1,500 square feet. With this other place, it's actually university housing. I work for a university. All bills included, and the house is quite a bit bigger. So it's 4-bedroom, 3-pool bath, and it has a huge yard, but it's $1,200 a month, and that includes utilities. So I know with a bigger house, your utilities will be more, but this includes everything. So you can run the heat as high as you want in the winter and the AC as high as you want in the summer, and it's still just that flat rate. So it's going to increase it by about $270.
So let's say we're talking $3,000 a year that you'd have to cough up, minus a small amount that you're not spending on the vehicle because your drive's so short. We're not talking
right.
about a lot of money. We can subtract from that for what you're not spending commuting, because you figure commuting is 50 cents a mile. So how many miles is it for that 10-minute drive?
Oh, and that's just in the afternoons. I get to work around 5 a.m. in the morning, so in the morning it's pretty short. So it's not even but maybe 2 miles, if that. So
each
not
way?
Not much at all. We would save about estimated maybe $30 a month on gas, and then we wouldn't have a parking fee, which is basically costing me $25 a month. So really just $55 for the commute that we'd be saving per month. So it doesn't really make up the difference. I guess the biggest.
How about lifestyle? Can you afford it? Like, are you making enough money that you can come up with what's 200 and change a month?
Yeah, I think we can. It's the opportunity cost of trying to get into a house that's more convenient, that's nicer than a townhouse in terms of having more space and having a yard, versus potentially taking that money and then saving it for savings for something in the future.
So the neighborhood you walk to work from, is it a great neighborhood? Is it equivalent or better than the one the townhouse is in?
Oh, yeah, no doubt. And it's literally like I think I would take about probably 40 paces from where the driveway meets the road, and then I'd be on campus.
So, okay, so it seems like a pretty easy decision to me to move. If you're okay financially right now and this isn't going to create a financial hardship for you, I would do it.
Okay, yeah, because I think, I mean, financially we're sitting pretty well. I mean, we have our 6 months emergency savings, the $12,000 for that in the bank, and then we have about 70 also in the bank, 70K, because we, at some point, we're wanting to put money down for a down payment on a house. But
what are you doing to save for retirement right now?
So retirement right now, we have, I put in 15%.
Oh,
I think
move.
15 to 17%
move.
A month.
Forget it. You're done. You're good.
Okay.
Move to the four-bedroom house. Walk to work. Do it.
Yeah.
Feel comfortable with it. Don't even fret about it.
Okay.
You sign that deal, dump the townhouse.
Okay. Yeah. I mean, and we have a couple months as well to save up a little more for that, you know, to make the move, which isn't going to be but just across town. So,
I wouldn't worry at all. You got a complete green light to pay that extra money and move. With the way you're handling money, you're obviously very cautious. You're good to go. Wow. What a deal. Walking to work. Denise is with us on the Clark Howard Show. Hi, Denise.
Hi, Clark. I just recently started listening to your show, and I'm just obsessed. You're such a kind guy, and you give such great advice.
Well, you're nice to say that. Thank you. I'm glad you are tuning in.
I have a credit card that gives me really great travel points, but it's mostly for domestic. I use it for every single thing I can possibly use it for. I pay it off every month. And I'm wondering if there's any good credit cards out there that would give me great travel points, but do foreign travel instead of just so much domestic.
So you're tired of which airline is your frequent flyer on that's only domestic? That would be
Southwest,
yeah.
Through Chase.
All right. So the Southwest card, I mean, it's great because it's so easy to redeem for the free tickets. But how many times do you want to fly in the U.S. in Southwest? You're ready to go further.
Yes.
Okay.
But I also, you know, it would be no problem capping them out, but we have a lot. So I'm wondering, are there any credit cards that ever will transfer points or roll points over to a competitor?
Well, American Express, with their membership miles, has the best transfer program there is right now. And so any of the American Express cards that are there, I think they're all annual fee cards for that. But with membership miles, you can even wait till there's a transfer bonus and move the miles to one of the international airlines. And that would be a way to turn these points into free international travel, where the best bonuses of all are when you turn them into front of the plane. Now, on that score, from time to time, also the same people that issue the Southwest Visa offer special bonus signups for the British Airways Visa. And the British Airways Visa on all the lists is always near the top. And how close do you live to a British Airways departure point?
Well, I live in Metro Detroit. I'm not sure.
I would be surprised if they don't fly out of Detroit.
Yes.
But British, particularly if you like going to Europe, the British Airways Visa, when there's a big sign-up bonus, that works out to be a very good card for international. Again, you have an annual fee with it like you do with the Southwest, and it restricts you to really flying British Airways and American and Iberia as well. But that would be an alternative that you could look at.
Great.
But the greatest flexibility, though, is the American Express product.
Okay.
So if you go read about the membership miles, it does offer you where you're a free agent. And so if you decide, hey, I really want to go to Asia, and you look who's got the flights that you could use to go to Asia, what I recommend is you sign up for an airline frequent flyer program that's part of their membership transfer, then go check availability, because you don't want to transfer points and then there's no free seats available.
Right.
And then you do the transfer from your membership miles, bank of miles.
Okay, well, thank you very much.
But remember this, you have to spoil yourself, because the real benefit of any of these international programs is not a coach seat international. You get your real value when you upgrade to business class. So you just have to suffer in that business class lie flat bed, okay? Think you can handle that?
I think I could handle that.
Okay. Now, the big thing now with the frequent flyer, and, oh, Denise, go look at this, by the way, creditcardtuneup.com, the card that is considered to be the best reward card that is for travel in the country right now, has a massive annual fee. It's the Chase Sapphire Reserve. The annual fee, I think, is $450. But the overall rewards you get from it are considered to be the best of any reward card in the country today. I don't remember, though, if you can use the points you get for international or only for domestic. It's time for Ask Clark. That's a special segment of the show where you post a question for me on Clark.com. There, our producer, Joel, asks, what you got, Joel?
All right, Clark. Richard wrote in. He says, I got a text saying that there was a Wells Fargo alert and asking that I call a specific number for more information. It seems like a scam.
Well, why don't I call it and see what's going on? Is this going to work? Let's try. I'm not going to give you the number on the air because I don't want people calling if this is bogus.
Thank you for calling Wells Fargo. A text message was sent to inform that your debit card has been suspended as per your request. If you have not made that request, please press 1 to reactivate now. For faster service, please enter your 9-digit social security number.
Okay, Joel. Okay, that's funny. Well, the crooks have a real sense of humor. I think that speaks for itself. Obviously, that is not Wells Fargo. It is just a scam. It could be insert any bank name, and you call in, they've captured your social security number. Who knows what they captured next? I can't go any further. Yes, that completely is bogus.
Thanks for listening to the Clark Howard Podcast. Download new episodes every Monday through Friday at podcastone.com. That's podcastone.com.